Hey guys, this is Valle from Moji here. Danish Counter-Strike is one hell of a drug, but so is Thorin's YouTube channel.
Right, I'm here for another episode of Reflections, and my guest for this one is going to be Chaos, who is a very old-school UK Counter-Strike player. And the reason, actually, I thought this would be an interesting interview to do, Chaos, is because of the nature of the internet. I know everyone says that meme of, like, the internet never forgets. Believe me, mate, it forgets loads of esports. Because the downside is a lot of the websites that stuff was hosted on, especially domestic stuff like ours from the UK scene, etc. These were just websites like, you know, people who were enthusiasts owned, and they don't pay the domain cost anymore, and no one's archived them. And unfortunately, like, search engines nowadays, the way the algorithms work, are actually very bad at finding this stuff. If you ever try Googling it all, etc., you just won't find it. So I thought what would be cool is, it won't be like, even though I've done a lot of old school interviews, on the other ones I can go and double check the facts. For this one, we're going to have to go a lot from memory, so it's understandable. Yeah. Both of us might forget certain things, might get details wrong, but we'll see where we go. I thought it would be a fun angle, because people do often ask me about the UK scene, but it's a whole, like, you often know so many people that sadly now aren't that well remembered. So in your case, right, let's see if you agree with this characterization. I would say, right, the thing that people have to understand, maybe this is where we start the interview with, is even though you're super old school and you were playing in what now would be considered like the beginning of Counter-Strike, Counter-Strike was a really weird game in the esports sense in the early days, because I would say actually the first like year or two of the game actually established like a weird, like they were almost treating like the people who were the best in the first year or two, so it was basically like the Four Kings players, if people don't know, they were almost treated for the next like 3 or 4 years like they were like the aristocracy or something, and they were just a above everyone else, and everyone else for the next years were always trying to get into their team or make a team that could be good enough to battle them. And even though now this might sound like what's the big deal, like back then it really was a big thing of like, can anyone get in a 4K, can anyone have a rival team, will they just poach the talent? Like, you remember this sort of ambience of the scene back then, because you were one of the names that was like right on the cusp, right? You were like good enough to potentially be in either the rival team or to join their team, but you were like around that circle.
Yeah, I mean, I literally played from the very first Counter-Strike LAN back in the UK in like 1999, and it was 4v4, Four Kings were there. So that was the first time I kind of came across them. And yeah, it's, I mean, we played that. I played them in, within a number of teams. They were always kind of the one, they were one, the ones that got to the early kind of, they were very well organized. They had a good leader called, a guy called The Genius. Johnny Nefgen, he built up this team, and they were, you know, quite unbeatable at the time. I think I played them quite a few times on LAN, and I actually beat them a few times on LAN. And I also came very close to beating them playing with various clans. But I think the reason they were the best and the reason they won most LANs was because of the fear factor. You'd play them and you could see people kind of crumbling, thinking, oh, I can't hold this. They're going to get us. They're going to get us. And I think when I played them, I just my kind of character when I used to play, I showed no respect for anyone. I had like, you know, an ego. I wouldn't say I was arrogant, but I had an ego whereby I'm going to not play your game. I'm not going to sit back and play defense. I'm going to attack you. They beat the teams that I was in more times than I beat them, but we did win. We beat them in the final of ESWC, so we went to Paris, beat them in the World Cyber Games LAN. But yeah, they were, you know, the best team in the UK. They had some really long, consistent, and I think you kind of see that in the CS scene at the moment. It doesn't, you can put the five best players aim wise in a team, but if you don't have that kind of team that's played together for a long period of time, those core players, that in-game leader, they're invaluable. So they had such a core team for such a long time, and yeah, they were the best team in the UK. But towards the end of my kind of playing years, I beat them, and you know, that was quite satisfying to go to beat them in the final, go to Paris in 2004. It was fantastic. But yeah, they were a class above, and it was I was always kind of playing in teams that we were trying to beat them. Yeah, so that's probably the best way I'd describe it as well. So
right, this might sound, if anyone's from the old school, they might even get butthurt by this part, but I'm going to phrase it like this anyway, because this is how I remember it, which is, it's true that this team, Four Kings, like you said, they not only were really good at winning all these qualifiers and always being the number one team, and they even were pretty good internationally, like they would make top eights and stuff and they'd have a chance to do well, you know. But the problem I always saw was this. It's like a twofold problem. You can take this question wherever you want. It's open-ended. There's two angles to it. One was, unfortunately, to me at least, they were actually like the poster boys of what I always thought was the worst attitude element of the UK scene, which was if you were in the number one team like they were and you did go to all the lands, you had the salary, instead of being like, this is sports and I'm a sportsman and I'm a pro, the vibe was like, it's actually funnier if we sort of like mug everyone off and we practice like the least amount, still beat you at the qualifier. And it's like, you know, we don't even, it's almost like you're trying to be too cool. Like we don't have to try and we're like better than everyone. And then simultaneous to that sort of, what I'm essentially saying is even though they had the resources to do a lot of great things, it seemed like they sort of were maybe a little bit frivolous with that, or they didn't always like make the most use of it. And then the simultaneous part to that, which is why I always wondered about what people like you thought, was if you're in the teams trying to battle them, they were also, in my opinion, very cynical with how they recruited people. Like, I don't think they really did just recruit someone because like this guy could be good in our team in this role. They would wait until a team like yours or fucking Infinity Esports or, well, you were in Clan One at one point, you know, all the teams that were like the rival teams over the, they would wait until the team was that close to beating them and then they'd just come and take your best player. And that would be like simultaneous, not only just to make sure we win, but make sure you can't beat us. Am I off base on this one? What do you think on this?
No, I think you're right. I mean, first of all, kind of, they were kind of detached from the rest of the CS community in the sense that there was, I mean, I used to play with an EGA, but I think there was an element of arrogance in the sense that, you know, we're better. So they kind of didn't engage so much with the community, play kind of pugs and things like that. But I certainly think the we don't need to practice much was more of an image rather than fact, because from playing them, you could tell the way they played, the teamwork, the timing of utility, all that kind of stuff. You could tell that was a well-rehearsed setup that they practiced, and I would imagine they practiced more than anyone, but they just didn't kind of let on to that. But you're right, when there were teams getting good enough to beat them, that's when they would kind of look at taking your best player or kind of making a change. So, yeah, I do think that they kind of did do that. But, you know, they were the best team. They had the best kind of players anyway. It was kind of like that. They were kind of a little bit detached from the rest of the community, and there wasn't, you know, maybe a little bit of arrogance, I don't know. But yeah.
Right, back then, I mean, one of the main players for their team that had all the status and was, everyone said he was the best UK player for about 5 years or something, was obviously Mangia Capria. Yeah. Right. What would you tell me about this player? What do you remember?
He was absolutely fantastic player. He was incredibly calm. And in the early days, his aim was absolutely out of this world. But I think it was a level of calmness that took him kind of... I read an article on the internet a while ago, then I think it's still on there, where he did an interview and he would say people were, you know, when I would play people, I could see them shaking. And he kind of built that reputation up that he was the best player. People, like I said earlier, people would fear him. So, I would probably say he was the best player in the UK, and he was the kind of core. He was there throughout from the beginning. So I think, you know, I can only say he was a fantastic player. Never really got to play with him, but lots of respect for me. He achieved a lot of things in the CS world, went to kind of what you would class now as majors in the CPL and things like that. So absolutely fantastic player, probably the best UK player in 1.6 in my opinion.
The other player from their team, and he was obviously his partner in crime for a long time, even though I'm also old school like you, and to me he wasn't original Four Kings player, he was like uninspired or whatever the fuck, was obviously Harriman, if people remember. He used to actually be called Lil, if people remember his alias from way back in the day. Right, this is a player who I also want to ask about, because again, he was considered one of the best players. But the difference is, whereas Mangia Capra, like you're saying, he was way more of like a chill guy, and if anything, it wasn't even like he was trying to be aloof, he just seemed like he was just like a chill guy who just played Counter-Strike. Harriman was the way spicier one. If people don't know, he trash-talked loads of people, he had a bunch of fights with people. Like, who was this guy? Did you have a good relationship with this guy? I could see you maybe bristling with this character.
Yeah, I mean, Stu's actually a friend of mine. I've got him on Facebook. We still chat from time to time. Despite the fact we were in opposite kind of clans, he was living in Birmingham. I'm Shrewsbury, so I'm not kind of it was like an hour away. I remember giving him lifts to and from lands and things like that. So even though we were different kind of teams, you know, we always got on really well. And I remember playing him in the final at the ASWC in Sheffield, and I'm just like giving it him like I'm in a 1v1, and I'm going, "Come on, Stu, where are you?" Just shouting. I always got on really well with Stu. So yeah, I've never heard that he was kind of getting in fights and things, but yeah, I get on well with Stu. Still talk to him. He's doing well. But yeah, absolutely player as well. So,
right. One thing I want to ask about was, as I said in the scene, partly because of how Four Kings ran it and partly because, like, at the time, realistically, they had a really good sponsorship and there wasn't really like a second, third one. Like, the drop between the Four Kings sponsorship and another one was like, if people don't know, the other one would just be maybe you get your travel to the LAN. Like, maybe they book a hotel. That's about it. They were on like salaries per month, like fly to the event. And obviously the joke is they would win the qualifier as well, which got them the tickets. So like, they were really like cannibalizing the UK scene to some degree. Right. One thing I want to ask you about is, this is just from memory, but wasn't there a thing where, like, at different points in time there was always a different rival team to Four Kings? And I remember that one of the cool periods was when the brand new team came along, Clan One, which obviously everyone was loving because it was newer players, it was people who hadn't been in the old teams. And when they came along, you were in that team but briefly, right? Didn't you go to like one LAN, or was it one or two LANs or something?
Yeah, we went. I can't remember what LAN it was. I think it might have been another WCG, but I came in to play for Clan One, and I've just joined. And we went to this LAN for our first time playing together, and I think we lost in the final to 4K, but it was like 13-11, and it was on their best map was Train. They had this kind of A split setup, Ivy, Pop Dog, and Main, and they had it to perfection. They would absolutely whoop everyone. And I remember. Kind of doing what I said earlier in the thing. I was always a very aggressive player with no respect. So I would literally attack. I'd literally run out the middle in A and have the like swing for who's got the best aim. And I remember I was getting a lot of success there. And it literally went to the last round and we lost. Back then it was MR12 and we lost 13-11 in the final. It's only one map as well, but it was a really good performance. And, yeah, it was. We came really close with Clan One. It was actually when I beat them in on LAN with a clan. I don't know if you remember them. This is like really old school, with a clan called CS Club 7.
Okay.
And that was like, I mean,
the joke being it's obviously a play on the band S Club 7 from the
90s. Oh, yeah, so absolutely. Don't know. Absolutely. Yeah, so it's actually local lads. It was kind of a team from near me. They live half an hour away, but they were kind of, we were kind of up there first thing in the early days of the scene. But back then it was like 4v4, and we beat them on LAN then and lost to, I don't know if you remember, Nocturne.
Yeah, the other classic rival. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. But yeah, no, we actually, ironically, we've been trying to beat 4K for a long time, and we did it as a pug team, a team, I don't know if you remember, called Wolf. We just kind of scrambled.
Yeah, we'll come to that, don't worry. We'll definitely come
to
that.
Yeah, we just scrambled five players together, did a bit of training for like a couple of weeks before, turned up at the LAN and aimed to have some fun and see what we could do. So yeah, it was.
By the way, as an aside, what happened with, why didn't you stay in Clan One? Like, this seems like it would have been a great team for you.
I don't know. It's, I guess the thing for me, I was always ultra competitive, ultra driven. I wanted to be the best, and we weren't winning. And I just wanted to, I had that drive and that determination. I just wanted to be better. And I found that Clan One guys, lovely people, but they didn't want to put in as much hours as me. I kind of wanted to take it to the next level. That's just my nature. And we moved on, made kind of that pug team. I played for a good French team. I don't know if you remember that, Unit of Ghosts and things like that. But I always wanted to go to the next level. But like you say, 4K, for example, monopolised the whole UK scene. They had all the kind of sponsorships. They had kind of salaries, like you say. So we were always up against it, no matter who we were playing with. We were playing essentially for free. We had some sponsorship deals. We'd win, you know, the prize pools were like £2,000 for winning lands and things like that, which wasn't a huge amount of money compared to the salaries that 4K would get. But yeah, so that's it. Yeah, I kind of left because I just wanted to kick on. Never really got to that next level. It's always been difficult in the UK. We don't have that kind of it's an obsession in Scandinavia, and they've got all these internet cafes, and it's another level. It's another level of opportunity as well. So never got to kind of play in a big European team, but I would have loved to have done so.
Right, the player from Clan One, I obviously want to ask about, because he was just like, you could see the eye test, this guy was mental. It was obviously Keiju, if people remember. Yeah. And obviously he did play with you and the Wolf team later, and that was part of the scout. Right, I've heard this guy, by the way, it wasn't just like me who thought it was good. I've heard he was one of those guys who just turned down the Four Kings offer like half a dozen times, and everyone sort of knew behind the scenes this guy is just the shit, right? But wasn't he like a player who wanted to play with his friends or something? It was one of those weird angles, right?
Yeah, I mean, by pure fluke, I was chatting to Righteous from Clan One yesterday, and we were talking about Seamus, is his name, Keiju.
Right.
He had the best aim I've ever seen, like, and I've ever played with. He was just pure aim. He was, a great temperament as well. Like you say, he just wanted to play with friends. I don't know if he turned 4K down, I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, he was, the whole thing around Clan One is it was built on friendships, and it was built on kind of personalities, and we just, you know, we wanted to win, but we, the primary thing was to have fun, and Seamus was, you know, he would have been a fantastic fit for 4K because he had that personality, that temperament, to stick around. He, you know, his reactions and his aim were what stood him out from everyone else. So yeah, he was an absolutely fantastic player. Trying to track him down just to kind of see how he's keeping and things like that, but he's gone totally off the grid, unfortunately. So. Fair enough.
Right, since you referenced it there, we should actually talk about that. You were briefly in the team Unit of Ghosts, which isn't that famous a name now, but at the time, if you go to the French scene, like obviously, yes, they had like Against All Authority and fucking, yeah, Good Game was the other one, but this was like right up there as one of the teams. And at the time, it was actually very rare that this happened. This is basically, like, my analogy would be, if people remember back in the 90s and the 80s and the 2000s, the first players who were left the Premiership and went to like La Liga and Serie A, that was like a big deal back then. It was actually rare that you went that direction. It was the other way around, people to come obviously in the later days. So like to actually play for a French team was pretty rare back then. How did you get the hook up in that sense? And then the obvious question, did they have to just speak to you in English? Did they come in French and you just played it without knowing what they were saying? How did you manage that part?
Yeah, I mean obviously Unit of Ghosts, they were one of the top French teams, you know, absolutely, you know, known all around the world. I kind of like going back to kind of what I said before, I always wanted to drive to kick on. I would message them, I'd be like, come on, just let me play one game and show you what I can do. That was just, you know, I'd play pugs with them and I played well, and I'd just say, just give me one game, and I'd get my chance. They'd say, look, we're short, do you want to play? And I'd have a really, really, really good game, because I really wanted to do well. And I played two or three games with them. The communication, you know, they would have to speak English to me, but I, you know, I played well in those games and they were impressed, and that's kind of how I got in the team. And obviously around that they paid for me to kind of go to Paris to play in LANs and things like that. So it was kind of a basic sponsorship sort of thing. But yeah, I kind of, you know, chased the opportunities. I said, look, give me a shot. Just let me play and show you what I can do. And I played and I had some good games and they took me on, and it was a really good team. We had a lot of fun. We played some really good CS at LANs, and it was a really good experience. So yeah.
You've referred earlier like to some of the style of play you had. Like, you were also a player with good aim, like good AK, etc., right?
Yeah, I mean, I was I was a rifler, secondary AWPer, but I think kind of I had the thing that kind of, I chat to people like, I don't know if you remember Real Fire, he's a friend of mine. We chat now and again and chat about like the old days, and it was all, like I said to him, it was always ego with me. Like, I didn't show anyone respect. I would take the jewels. I would not be afraid. You know, I'd play against Heaton, who was, you know, I don't know if people will remember him. He was the best. He was like the Pelé of 1.6, and I play against him. And I'd never like think I was out of my depth. I'd always kind of take the fight and things like that. So it was more, I think I was a really good rifler, and I was never afraid to swing and take the jewels. And I think what I was probably known for was my clutches, something I'm not very good now when I dabble in a bit of CSGO, but I would literally win almost every clutch at 1v1. I absolutely enjoyed them. It was the whole mind game. Where are they? and where do they think I'm going to be, and what do they think I'm going to do? And I would always, always win the clutches. I would always know in my head where they were on the map, where they're most likely to be. So yeah, it was the rifle and secondary AWP and mainly the clutches that I suppose were my best kind of areas of CS. So
along those lines, in kind of touching on what you said about the Mangia Capria example, that's also something that I actually found also was interesting, the difference between who's just good at Counter-Strike and who can like play on LAN and be a pro, is I've heard from the people who are really good at clutches, like if you're someone where that just doesn't faze you, it actually can, no joke, it's like easier than you might imagine, because they said, like you said about the Mangia Capria, they said, no joke, when you get to the LAN, people are just like, they're just making mistakes all the time. They're really scared in those moments. They're like shit in the bed. Even their aim's just going, because obviously like, they're so nervous, they're missing their shots. I've heard like actually if that's like a strength of yours, you can just feast when you're at LANs.
Yeah, and you know, I remember when like playing that final ESWC against 4K, I was winning clutches against Mangia Capra and against Stu, Lil, Harriman, and it's all down to no respect. You know, I respect them. I would respect, you know, they're fantastic players, absolutely outstanding, but you know, I would always back myself to beat anyone. I was never, ever fazed. And, you know, I suppose that's the difference between, and I'm not saying I was the elite, but I suppose the difference between being good at something and being the best at something is kind of an ego and kind of knowing you will, rather than thinking sort of attitude. So, but you're right. I saw a lot of people. It's that whole kind of image of, oh, I'm playing against 4K, I'm playing against Mangia Capra, he's better than me, what do I do? Panic, like chicken and headlights. But as long as you just kind of keep a cool, calm head, think about it logically, play your game and not worry about someone else's game, that's when you kind of play your best Counter-Strike, I guess. So
since you referenced them, let's talk about the story then of the glorious takedown of Four Kings with Wolf. So if people don't know, the Wolf team was a really interesting mix of players, because it was basically, the funny thing is, in the past years when people had tried Clan One, Nocturne, there was even some other ones, I forget, like Ownage or whatever they were called, or some UK team with a similar name. All these teams would come along and they'd be like second best to Four Kings with like a real team, and like we're trying really hard, we're swapping pieces out. And then the joke was a whole bunch of these players sort of made like a fucked up super team, but just as a one-off for this LAN, right, as for the ESWC qualifier, and this was the one that finally broke through and won.
Yeah, and we literally just, so it was kind of after Clan One, and I don't know if you remember C4U with
Critical and all those guys, of course.
Yeah, so we kind of, Clan One was sort of coming to an end, and it was kind of me, the guys that wanted to play on and take it serious was me, Kiju, Sheamus, as we were talking about earlier. And then we kind of mixed in, then we had, I don't know if you remember AD.
Yeah, of course.
AD, obviously, is no longer with us. He's really sad, but
he was kind of like a prodigy in the game, right? He was very young, right?
Absolutely. And after I finished playing Counter-Strike, he went on and he was making gallery and playing for 4K. And so it was, we kind of gathered together like a couple of Clan One, me and Kiju, a couple of C4U tricks and Kai. And then AD as well. We just thought, let's go to this LAN. We went to prelim qualifiers. We won that. Did some hardcore kind of practicing. Turned up at the LAN. We didn't expect to win. It was double elimination back then. We were just on a roll. We were just running people over and got to the upper final. We actually, really good semi-final, and we played, I think it was called Tag. Do you remember Zag and Duck and those guys?
Yeah.
And they still play, and they're really good at Counter-Strike Go. But we beat them. It was Inferno. We beat them 12-0, and we thought, oh, we're cruising here. One round, and we're in the final. We lost, we went T on Inferno. We lost 11 in a row, and it was 12-11. And it literally, we're shitting ourselves. We're like, what have we done? We've thrown it. We've choked. And we got the last round. You know, it's a funny thing. It's like football, the Netherlands game, the like pressure just does, when it's close to finishing, pressure does crazy things to you. And we got that round. And then we kind of went into the final and we made a good start against 4K. But they were, I suppose they were, I remember like while we were waiting for the games, I remember saying to Stu, Lil, Harriman, like, who do you reckon's going to win? He's like, oh, well, we'll come first, and then Tag will probably come second, and I'll probably put you guys third. And I just remember going, yeah, we'll see, mate. We'll see. I remember it like it was yesterday. We played them on Dust, and we beat them like 13-11. So it was a pretty close game. And once we'd gone past that mental block of we can beat them, we're better than them, we played them on Nuke and we absolutely ran right over them. I think we beat them 13-7. We just bulldozed them. And, yeah, it was... then we qualified for the kind of ESWC, which I suppose is the same as a major these days. And
sure,
it kind of... The kind of wheels came off there because Kyle, he just said after the thing, I was only in it to just kind of win this. I don't want to go to Paris. So we were kind of left in a situation where we had four guys and we had like 2 weeks to find someone else. So we got critical in, as you mentioned earlier, but we just didn't have that kind of, we hadn't trained with him. You get a ringer in and you're always up against it. I'm sure you see that in kind of the CS at the moment. So it doesn't matter who you bring in. If you haven't got that timing and that teamwork and that knowledge of who's throwing what util and who's playing where and when the timings and things, then it all goes off. So yeah, we went out there. We won a couple of games. We lost to MIBR. We lost another game and we didn't qualify from the group stages. But it was a really good experience. We felt amazing. Like, we went to Paris. We had hotel for free, food for free. Like, playing in this tournament where people knew who you were. It was an amazing experience. So yeah, it was amazing that five guys just get together, practice a bit, and kind of win the UK LAN. It was good fun. So
the reason I set it up, like, we had to talk about, like, establishing Four Kings and the fact that they were, like, the dominant force in the scene, is because if people don't know, people, this had been tried. Like, I'm going to say, like, they must have won some mad, like, 10 LANs and no one ever beat them. Like, it was outrageous how many times. Like, true, yeah, they would bring in international talent and they had all the money. We've all said all that, but you'd still think eventually they'd have lost. So, like, it must have actually been pretty surreal to just win and actually beat them, because it's like, it felt like the scene was waiting for that for so many years and then finally someone broke through.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, in the early days, we did beat them a couple of times, but then they just went to another level. Like you say, for about 4 or 5 years, no one could touch them. And I remember playing at, like, IEM, I think it was Intel Extreme Masters in London, and we got them in the final, and the IEM had made this stupid map. We had to play this bizarre... It was
a custom map of the venue, yeah, wasn't it weird, right?
So we were playing, yes, a map of the actual building, and it was just like... What the fuck is this map?
And wasn't it something mad as well, mate? Like, it was almost like it was like a vertical map or something, because it was all like levels.
Yeah. They were elevated.
The problem is, this map was never used ever again. It was just a custom for this one tournament for the final.
Absolutely.
Right?
And it was, and we played them, and they, going back to where they're like, we don't need to practice, that was when I was like, wow, these guys have practiced this map 24/7.
Right. Okay.
They were doing shit. They were doing boosts that we didn't know existed. They were like, killing us from places we couldn't even see, going up the elevators. It was kind of sad that they put this stupid map in, because I don't think it was a fair reflection
of
the quality of the teams. But yeah, they absolutely ran over us on that map. And they were untouchable for a long period of time. But, you know, for me, it was, the last kind of major LAN I went to, we beat them, and that was quite fulfilling to obviously kind of being that second best clan in the UK, finally kind of overtaking them. So yeah, it was, they were far and away the best UK team in 1.6, without question. But yeah, a lot of it's down to sponsorships and salaries and things like that. So yeah, no, nice to beat them in the end though. So.
Right, since you referenced them, I want to actually ask a bit. If people don't know, another interesting development in the scene was actually the arrival of that C4U team, because what's bizarre is, like, Critical, the character, was a very notorious figure, because when he first came in the scene, he was like a really young guy. He was talking mad shit on everyone, and he literally did cheat like that. He was literally busted cheating, and I remember that, like, set him back a few years. But the mad thing is, I'll give him credit, like, he actually did keep trying, and he kept trying for years, and he actually became good without cheats, and he actually had, like, he made this team that a bunch of players came from, like Wilzu, etc., these people who became the next top, yeah, players. There's a bunch of good players came through this team. And so, as much as I will say, even to the end, he was pretty reviled, and as far as I know, even in Source, which I didn't follow, that he went into. Like, I've heard in Source he was the same, and he's like, everyone was hating on him, and it was always trash talk and stuff. What was your memories of this character? Was he someone, like, were you against this guy? Were you battling him? What was your relationship with him like?
I remember the first time I saw him play. I remember him online. He was trash, like you say, he's trash talking everyone, and I think, I don't know if he cheated, but you wouldn't be surprised. He was a really good player online. But when we went to LAN, And I watched him play, and that was kind of when I was at my peak, and I was watching him play on LAN, and I was like, this guy's good. Like, this kid's not just, he's not just like an online player. He really can play. So, yeah, I played, you know, he's, I knew he's a really good player the first time I saw him. And, you know, we were friends for a bit. He was a little bit brash, and he would, you know, trash. I remember going to a LAN playing on his team, and he would, I mean, this guy, what was his name? He actually got punched because he was, you know, trash talk. He didn't realize that trash talking online, taking that to a LAN, you're sure. not going to piss anyone. It was, what's his name? I can't remember, but he literally trash talked this guy, and he walks up to him and he punched him and cut his eye open. And I think that kind of was a little bit of a lesson for him to kind of, you know, not be so brash and trash talk. But yeah, I mean, it's a weird one. He was a fantastic player, but he was a bit of a dick. You know, he was just, like you say, trash talking everyone. And if he loses, he would like abuse the opposition, saying you're cheating, you're shit. And I didn't like that. So in the end, I distanced myself a little bit from him. But he was, as I understand, he carried on playing Counter-Strike for a long time after, and he was pretty good at it. But yeah, I always knew when I first saw him play, he was, you know, he had everything it took to and I was certain he would make it to the top end of the UK scene. But yeah, he was a bit, you know, he's very disrespectful. You know, he would not say, you know, good game, well played after the game. He would just like be, I told you I beat you, and things like that. And for some people, that's part of the package of being a good player. It's an ego, but I think he would cross the line a little bit. But but I played with him a few times. Not my kind of guy, so I don't keep in touch with him or anything. But yeah, he was a real trash talker and things like that. But he backed it up, so you know, that was part of the attraction with him, is he talked the talk, but he walked the walk as well. So.
By the way, this actual like theme that you talk about, where people would talk shit on the line and be like the keyboard warrior, and then come to a LAN and find out like, oh shit, people remember that. Like, I would say that's something that made the UK scene very unique. I don't know if it's because obviously some people were from working class background or whatever, but like compared to other scenes, mate, I've been to loads of like the American LAN, Swedish LAN. It's actually very, very rare anyone ever comes to Blows. Like, nearly always, like, that's just like, you know, people leave it online, and then online they're all like shy and she's like, hello, nice to meet you. And that in the UK LANs, there was definitely, if people talked shit, people were with, like, that whole like see you at LAN in the UK meant something different. That meant they might punch you if you see you at the LAN.
Yeah, it was Toko. Now I remember Toko's got to play as well. Like, it was Toko. He goes, Critical said, like, just taking the piss out of him. Toko just come up and absolutely sparked him and shook him up. And I remember going to LANs. Do you remember Paino, Johnny Payne?
Right, yes.
I remember going to, was it I-19? And he got in a fight. We got pissed up. And he got, some guy was chatting to him on the iSeries keyboard. So John goes down and sorts him out and got banned for the day. So, I mean, it didn't happen often, but yeah, there were occasions where, and do you know what? If someone wound me up online and I got an opportunity to meet them in person, and actually, you know, I'm a pretty direct person, I'd probably have words as well, but not. Didn't happen often, but now and again we're a few little punch ups. So, but at least it sorted a few people out to be a little bit more respectful. So, yeah.
What about if I ask you about a few more people from around the scene and you give me your thoughts or your recollections? So another person, I don't think he played with you. I'm not certain. He might have played in one team. I know he later joined Four Kings and was a good player. It was obviously the AWPA Akuji. You remember this guy? Did you ever play in a team with him?
I think I played some games with him towards the end. When I stopped playing, I think it was around 2005. And I remember the name Akuji. I think I played with him at the beginning, but I think it was kind of a crossover I kind of left the scene in about 2005. So I remember the name, and I'm sure I would have played against him. And I know he went on to be a very good player for Four Kings, but I didn't really play with him at all. That was kind of after my time, I guess.
What about then, since you actually referenced, I actually didn't know you were as old school as you referenced on that, since I actually only knew you came along around the time of like Clan 1 and just before that. So fair enough. Like, in that case, I'll ask you about some really old school people, because I was impressed, by the way, that you knew the really old school. When he said the genius, by the way, guys, like, that's how you know he actually knows really old school Four Kings. That's like way before the time of like the Harriman, like Manning and Camping with all the foreign players. This is the beginning.
I remember going to this first ever Counter-Strike LAN, and it was in Nottingham, and it was called LAN Arena. I don't know if you remember it.
Yeah.
I just remember we literally played we'd played the tournament, then we'd play all night, and then we'd leave about 7 in the morning. I remember it was just like, we'd play the 4v4 tournament, and there's loads of people that were still around for a long time that actually played in that first LAN. Like Riz, I don't know if you remember him, and Tepum, and they were at the first ever LAN. And then I always remember after we finished the LAN, we came second to Marines, Bob and Skinner and Ali and all those guys. I just remember like after the LAN, leaving about 6 a.m, getting in the car, and it's just snow everywhere, and there's all these, it's dark, and all these hookers outside, which are trying to catch our eyes, so we just walk past and get in the car and drive home. But yeah, it's fantastic. But like 1999 seems like it literally is a lifetime ago, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Well, one of the people who you just referenced there, who was another figure, you'd have to be in the UK scene to know why this is a great shout to reference him, but I wanted to ask about this guy, was the player Bob, and his name really was just written B, a zero, B. Yeah, and if what people won't know about this guy, because I used to mess him all the time and ask him for like demos and stuff, because the mad thing about this guy was he really was someone who clearly was skilled at the game, but he was another character that just like didn't want to join Four Kings or be like a pro or something, right? He had like some weird angle where like he clearly was good at the game, right? A lot of people wanted him to be in the top teams.
Yeah, I mean, I'd go as far as saying he was the best player. Marines won that first LAN. They beat 4K in the semi-final. We played in the final, but Bob was unplayable. He was, in the very, very early days, he was the best player in the UK, better than Manji Capra. And I know for a fact that 4K tried to steal him on multiple occasions, but he was. There were a few players like that that yes. They just want to play with their mates. And
yes.
Bob, he was... I think he's from Scotland, and again, it was sort of like the guys that I used to play with that were live half an hour down the road from me. He just played with his mates, and he was absolutely out of this world. Remember playing? We used to play like Team UK and things like that, and he was incredible. But yeah, he just didn't want to move. He didn't want to leave his mates' team, and you know, he could have quite easily gone on to play for 4K and be one of the most recognised players in the EU scene. So.
Yes. I'd even say along those lines, there's another thing we can explain to sort of like set the ambience of what the UK scene was like. It's not just that Four Kings were the best and the other side. It's also like you're saying, whereas like maybe the American approach would be you know, like fuck friendship, like go for the best team, be the best squad. Like there were actually a whole bunch of people, Kiju, you, there's a whole bunch of people who basically could have been in these teams, but for whatever reason, they had a different mindset. Or sometimes like you say, they were just good at CS and they wanted to play for fun with their mates. Maybe they didn't want to be a CPL or some top pro. Like I also felt like there was more of like a chill vibe to some people in the UK scene. And also, I'll throw this last detail in, the part that I always think is really unfair when foreigners talk shit on the UK scene is they don't know back then how bad university internet used to be. So the problem was if you went to university, your career was just over. Like you're almost never gonna have like a good connection. So there's a lot of factors I actually think held back the UK from having better teams than maybe it could have.
100%. I mean, if back then, Scandinavia had the most ridiculous broadband infrastructure. They were like, if we go back to like 18 years when it was kind of, we were playing, I remember I was playing on ISDN and we would play, we would play NIP in Clan Base Eurocup, and we would have to play one map on our server and one map on a UK server, one map on a Swedish server, and we would play the UK server and we'd have like, I'd have like an 80 ping on our server because I was an ISDN, and our team would have like 40. They would have like 20 ping on our UK server and 5 ping on their server, and we'd have like I ping. So we were always up against it. I wouldn't say that it was, you know, I think even on an even playing field, they would have still been, the UK scene would still be behind. But yeah, certainly the kind of broadband infrastructure didn't help the UK scene at all. So, like I say, they had literally... In Scandinavia, their internet was insane. So I do think that did hold the UK kind of scene back a little bit. So I think that's a fair point.
By the way, I actually had the similar scenario to you, which is I had the period where I lived up north, so we didn't have DSL for years and years and years when all the people in London had cable and all this. So I actually got ISDN. I remember that was the game changer. If people don't know, the difference is the 56K modem, you'd have like 150 ping. The ISDN, if you get lucky, you might have like 50 ping sometimes. That was playable. Like, as you say, it's not mega, but it's playable. You can, if you're really good, you can have a chance at least, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you put a good player on any kind of connection, if they're good enough, then they'll, you know, it won't affect them too much. But ultimately, it's a game of reactions. It's fine margins. If you get to the top level and you get two players that shoot each other at the same time, it does come down to ping, and it does. It's that extra 5%, I guess, when you're playing online to have that connection, to have that kind of extra ping. Essentially, it gives you a reaction time advantage. So it was a massive kind of it kind of held the UK scene back a bit. So I don't know much about the UK scene now. I don't know. They must have good connections. Is it Endpoint, I think, are the main clan these days?
Yes.
Right.
What about another? This is more of like a scene name, but he was at the level where he could have been in top teams. Obviously, a player back then who was thought of as a prodigy was Anam. Who was this guy? Because what I remember was this. He's another person that clearly had skill, but as far as I remember, he had like, it was something weird, mate. Like, he also was one of those people who wanted, like this might sound whack if you think of how pro esports is now, but I think the reason he didn't want to always be in top teams is, unironically, he wanted to go out on like a Friday and a Saturday night, and like, he didn't want to stay in and be a nerd and practice the game, if you know what I mean. Give me your thoughts.
Mike License was his name. He played for, we recruited him for CS Club 7. He was a really, really early player. This is like 2000. Fantastic player, again, insane aim and things like that. But from memory, he just turned around one day and said, "I'm giving up CS. I want to go and play. I'm going to be a goalkeeper for Man City one day. So I'm putting all my focus into that." And never saw him again. I think he was kind of. But to an extent, you're right. He's like, "I don't want to play. I'm not going to play Friday, Saturday. I'm going out and things like that." But he was only a young lad. He was like when he was playing, he was like 16, 15, 16.
Right.
And then he just disappeared. I think by the age of 18, he was gone. He was ultra laser focused. And I'm going to be a professional goalkeeper, and I'm going to play for Man City, and never heard of him again. But yeah, he was another fantastic player. But he just disappeared, as a lot of people do. They kind of either fade away, or he just disappeared. So he was a brilliant player. I'm surprised you remember him, actually, Mike License. That's some old school knowledge.
It's all good. Here's the thing, mate. That's what my main strength is, just memory. So I've got another one, which is obviously he was quite a famous player back then. It was D'Artagnan. I mean, I know back then people like got rid of the aliases. So you would call like Edwards when he was in Four Kings or whatever, Infinity Esports. And this was a guy where I remember this is when, because basically, what I'll explain also part of how I know the UK scene. I was friends first with the people from the Nocturne team. So that's how I always knew like what was going on and stuff. And quite frankly, they were also the ones where I remember when he left and he went and joined I can't remember if it was Infinity Esports or Four Kings at the time. When he went and joined whichever their team was, that was also viewed in their circles like, "Oh, traitor, like we were supposed to like beat," it was like some fucking Star Wars prequel meme, like, "We were supposed to beat them together and you've joined them," like that was what it was viewed as. But he was a good player though. Who was this guy, do you remember?
Yeah, I mean, Greg Edwards D'Artagnan, he played for Nocturne, didn't he? And then he got, like you were saying before, when Nocturne, there was a point where Nocturne got to the point of beating, they went to the World Cyber Games.
Yes.
And they were at the point where they were on par with 4K. So obviously, like you say, 4K, let's take their best player. So they took Greg. He was with them. He played successfully with them for quite a while. And then they just, once they'd finished with him, they booted him out of the team. So we recruited him in Clan 1. It was an obvious choice to take the, you know, take the player that knows all their strats and things like that. And we played a LAN with him. But I kind of think he noticed when we went to a LAN and we boot camp, we were kind of just, we would practice, but we would then have fun and we would chill and we'd play stupid maps, and he couldn't understand.
He wanted to be pro, right? He was quite a serious guy, I remember.
And I think that kind of just emphasises how serious 4K took it, but without letting on how serious they took it. He would say, "We should be practicing, we should be doing 4 hours a day practicing retakes and all this kind of stuff." We're like, no, we've played. Let's just have a couple of beers, and then we'll play some silly maps and things like that. So, Greg was a really good player. Like you say, he was pinched by 4K, and then they just got rid of him when they didn't want him, which was a little bit harsh, I think. But another good player from the scene.
What about from the old school in the Nocturne team? One of the guys who was a mate of mine back in the day, because he was a very interesting character, was Messiah, if people remember him. Really old school player. What would you say about him?
Yeah, he was a good player. I played with him in Nocturne. Craig, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Craig. No, he was a really, really good player. He was around for quite a while as well. I can't remember if he was an AWP or what, but he was always respected. When I played him, you knew you were in for a tough game because he was a really good player. When I played in Nocturne with him, I learned quite a bit from him. He was a really, really good, intelligent player. So, again, another good player. Don't keep in touch with him, not sure where he's at. So, really good player.
And then another name, funnily enough, this was another team where the same thing happened. I remember they even made this team and they were like, the rule is we don't join Four Kings. And then immediately they went just on Four, which was the player Morph, if everyone remembers back in the day, because he literally just did that. He built the team and then he just went and joined Four Kings himself.
No, Morph, Alex. I spoke to him again. It's amazing, like, after all these years, how...
You just reconnected recently or something. Sounds like you have Morph on speed dial.
I remember chatting to him on WhatsApp earlier this year and just catching up. It's amazing, like, how many people still actually play on Steam, but also Counter-Strike. Alex doesn't anymore. He was a really good player. I played with him quite a few times. He was quite an interesting guy. He was clearly a very wealthy young man, like, had literally anything he wanted he could buy. But really nice guy. Played him on LAN. He was Russian. I think his dad was was in contact with Putin or something. He was a really big figure.
Okay. All right.
We saw him. So what happened was...
I guess it would make sense if people don't know there's loads of Russians in London, etc. And it was obviously like a big spot that a lot of the financial people went.
Well, we saw this. I can't remember who it was. I was chatting to TMC, or I don't know if you remember. I was just scrolling the news and I saw this article where this Russian, I don't know if he's a diplomat, but he was close to, he was in Putin's inner circle, and that he passed away. And then I'm reading the article and I scroll down and there's a picture of Morph.
Right.
I'm like, and it's his son. I'm like, bloody hell. I was just randomly reading the news one day and Morph came up in the article with a picture of him. His dad was a kind of successful businessman in Russia. So, he was another really good player, really nice guy. Spoke to him earlier this year. He's doing well. So, there's so many good players. But it's nice to just catch up for now and again, just see how everyone's doing. So,
yeah, sure. Right. What about this then? If I give you a shot, like, is there any names that we haven't mentioned yet that we're missing? Who's like some really good player back then? Maybe people didn't know how good they were. Is there some underrated players we should talk about?
The one player, I think the most underrated player in the whole world, the best player I ever played against was a guy called Meyers. He played for GG. He was their main man.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the French player, yeah.
This guy was out of this world. I played against Heaton, I played against Potty and Vestlan, and I played against Element, all those guys. And I could handle myself in those kind of, in those pug matches. This guy, Meyers, was something else. Like, he literally is I was just like, wow, who's this guy? I can't touch him. And he was one of those that he just, the CS scene now is, it's, kind of, multicultural in terms of countries and things like that. You've got Russians and Bosnians and playing in different teams. But back then, it was, if you're English, you're in an English team. If you're French, you're in a French team. Yes. If you're Swedish, you're in a Swedish team. That's just how it always was, because the money wasn't there to pay salaries for people to fly over. So I think kind of Meyers was unfortunately kind of held back there. But he was absolutely out of this world player. Probably the best I've ever played against. And obviously there was AD as well. Really sad what happened to him, that he's no longer with us. He was like an absolutely amazing player and an amazing young man, really nice lad. He kind of went up. I think he did go on to achieve things, didn't he? He played for Four Kings and he was salaried with Four Kings and things like that. But
as far as I remember about him, wasn't he also a bit unique in the sense that, like, almost everyone back then, if people don't know, was a little bit toxic in the UK. We all talked trash. And, like, even when it wasn't, like, harsh, like, the joke was back then, if people, like, everyone would just type the second they died in the round, whether you won or lost, that was just what people did. So I would say, from what I remember, this guy, he was also a very chill guy. Like, he actually seemed like a nice guy compared to most people.
Yeah, he was. I mean, I knew him for in the CS scene for like 3 or 4 years. I landed with him. He was in Wolf. We went to several lands and we spent a week in France. And he's one of those people that you could try and get him angry. He'd never get angry. He was very dignified. He was very. I never heard him say a bad word about anyone. Because he was small and he was kind of a target at times, some people online for abuse, he would never rise to it. He was very dignified. He was a really, really nice young lad. Like I say, I'm sure you know what happened. It's really sad that he's no longer with us. But yeah, lovely, lovely, lovely lad. And really great player as well. So.
Yeah. By the way, one thing I want to ask about, because we should also set the scene in this way, is like in the modern day, I've heard basically it is super professional behind the scenes now. Like if you're in a team that's good enough, you can just get access to the groups that have the right teams in that are at the appropriate level to you. You set up the scrims. Like nowadays, obviously managers do it all. It's not even players. It's like professional play. You know, you arrange it on Tuesday at this time, we're going to play. I've heard back in the UK scene though, that was another thing. It's like first of all, just because of the ping angle, I heard very rarely would you actually scrim the Scandinavian teams. Etc. Like they're just playing each other in the UK. When the teams were you in, were you just playing against, like, I'm guessing, what, like the best French team, best German team? Who would you actually get to scrim against that weren't UK teams?
So we would Sweden, because of the broadband infrastructure, we would play them. Like we would play Clanbase Eurocup, which I guess is like Pro League now.
Yes.
So we played NIP and other teams, but we would, like I say, it's one map on our server and one map on their server, and then it's the total rounds accumulated together. But we couldn't really practice against Swedish teams. We used to play some English teams, but like Four Kings wouldn't play us in practice matches.
Wasn't it also the case that they did that to stop people trying to like get as good as them, as it were, or like figure out what their style was, right?
I think it was that, and also kind of maybe an arrogance to say, well, they're not good enough. We need
Okay, fair enough. Yes, true.
I think that's the case, but we had... We used to play some really good, like, was it Romanian teams?
Okay.
We used to play the French teams quite a bit. We used to practice against them. I remember we played, isn't it like Taz and...
Taz and Leo from the Polish teams, right? The early ones, I'm guessing.
I think they were in a team called Pentagram.
Yes.
So we used to play Pentagram. So I think Taz, who went on to play, be quite successful, didn't he?
Sure, yeah.
We played against those guys. We played mainly kind of Dutch.
Ah, right.
Yeah, played some German teams, Mouse Sports and things like that. But generally, it was kind of the Western Europe. We wouldn't really practice against the Scandinavians. But we would play, like, back then, it's not like, face it, there would be, like, special MIRC channels where you could get, you just get 10 players together and you play like a pug. So I suppose it is sort of like, face it, but we would play, like, on servers with, it would be like kind of, I guess, an elite kind of mix. So we would play against the best players, but never really practice against them. Because when we did play, the pings were just, you know, we just couldn't compete with the broadband pings. So it was mainly Western Europe, but we did occasionally play the Scandinavian teams. So.
Right, here's a funny question for you. Because here's the thing, mate. A lot of people don't know this. Because I didn't go to many of the UK lands back in the day. Because first of all, I'm from up north. Like, I was a million miles away from London, mate. And then secondly, I was also poor. I'm not just fucking spending money on... People don't know train tickets are ridiculous in the UK. They are to this day. It's mental how much they cost. And so basically, what people won't know is, even though I come from the UK scene, I've never really been associated with the UK scene. Like, I know a lot of the history because I followed the game and I was an all-lifer. I was just a massive fan of Counter-Strike. But what people won't know is, it's funny, in the modern day, I'm actually quite notorious in esports. thoughts, because I'm very like, I just give my opinion basically. And I'm not afraid also to say I think players are shit, which unsurprisingly will never be popular with fans of said players. But if people don't know, that's only recently where I'm sort of like a media figure and people don't. It's actually the UK scene. I think that most people in the UK scene hated me. So I want to know, do you remember me back then? Do you remember what people thought? Because a lot of the players thought, they thought I sort of like betrayed the UK because I was doing like the international scene, you know, so they all thought I was like a bloody pawn against Sweden or something, you know, like, what's your, do you remember anything back then?
No, I mean, I don't, certainly don't remember you like kind of slagging people off.
I wasn't doing that back then. I was just a journalist. I get the vibe people didn't like me back then.
No. From back then, you always came across as respected, and you were kind of covering the kind of UK scene and things like that, and Europe. But you know, nothing kind of bad that I can ever imagine. I can't ever remember anyone kind of saying anything bad about you. It was really come into contact that much, did we? I just obviously knew what you did. You know what I did. But yeah, no, only ever heard good things back in the day. I was chatting to a couple of guys that I occasionally play Counter-Strike with, and they're like, oh, he slags everyone off and things like that. I said, it's good. You got to say, you want people to say it how it is.
Yeah.
That's what makes things interesting. You don't want a yes man. You want to invoke these kind of conversations. So yeah, no, it's
fair enough.
Quite good that you're doing it. I think it's, yeah, you got to challenge people.
Yeah. No, if people don't know, like in the modern day, I always give the example, obviously, of Roy Keane, because he plays that role. But like when I grew up, dude, I used to love fucking Alan Hansen, and all he ever did was brutalise every team and say, all the defence is shit, you know, like it's just a character. It depends if you, the thing with me is, I just decided, there's loads of people are going to say everyone's brilliant, so I'll just be the one who just picks out the players I think are shit, you know.
Everyone loves a villain, but yeah, no, it's absolutely. It's, I mean, I don't, like I say, I'm not really involved in the scene much, so I don't know who you've been slagging off or what you've been saying, but no, it's cool to have that character. You look at, like you say, Roy Keane, he just, the balance between him and Michael Richards,
it's mega, isn't it? Yeah.
You can't stop watching it. It's that relationship, and you like people that kind of say it how it is and challenge things. It's refreshing, rather than just saying the old boring thing that everyone else says. So yeah, no, I think that's good that you're doing that. So
since you said you basically cut off around like 2005, right, what was the reason why? Like, did you go and do something? Was it school? Was it job? What was the reason to like fade out of CS?
I think that any CS player, when I played CS, I'm a very driven person. I wanted to be the best, and I would literally play Counter-Strike 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. I would never take a day off for 3 or 4 years. And it reached a point where, I suppose, like with footballers, you just kind of, you lose that edge. And I just kind of, I was tired of it. And I remember, it was actually playing with Critical. I remember the game where I just thought, I was playing with Critical, and the C4U guys, we were losing to a team online in a practice match that we shouldn't be losing to on Inferno, and Critical just slagging them off, you're cheating, you're rubbish, see you at LAN. And I just thought, what the hell am I doing here with playing with 16-year-old kids, slagging people off? I just kind of reached the end of the road, and at the same time, I must have been about 23, 24. I didn't really have a huge amount of qualifications at the time, so I left. I went to college, university, started my own business and things. So it was more of a, I need to grow up. I'm not going to make a living out of Counter-Strike. There's not enough money in it. Time to get a real job and do things properly, which I've done. So it just felt like the right time to go. So.
Right, even though, as you say there, like in a life certain circumstance, maybe that was like the right move and you had your time in Counter-Strike and stuff. At the same time, have you ever looked in the years since and seen it getting big and getting the Counter-Strike content? Because there's another thing, to be fair, I will say, no one knew back then how long Counter-Strike's going to last. Like, remember, these games used to usually last a couple of years and there'd be the sequel or something. So no one would really guess back then Counter-Strike would exist today, like 2022. So to be fair, no one was planning that way. But do you ever think, like, what if I'd kept going?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think if I was born 20 years later, if I was around now, I think I would be, I'd like to think I would be up there because of kind of drive and competitiveness. But when I kind of exited the game, I felt like Counter-Strike was dying because they were bringing out Source.
Sure.
It had just come out. And I was playing it, and I was thinking, this just doesn't feel like Counter-Strike. It doesn't feel like the same engine. It doesn't feel like the same hitbox. It just feels like another iteration of, like, you, as you kind of get with Call of Duty. So
yes.
I thought, well, CS probably won't be around for much longer. It's dying. And then, lo and behold, all these years later, it's bigger than ever. And, you know, when we played in Paris, I think there were like 5,000 people watching the game. On back then, you couldn't watch it on Twitch or anything. You had to actually load up Half-Life TV yes. in the game. And we'd have like 5,000 people watching us. And these days, it's like hundreds and hundreds of thousands at these major events. It's incredible. And I can't believe how much the game has, like, grown. It's amazing. I mean, I fell in love with the game in 1999. And I stopped for a long time. I still play a little bit of CSGO.
You like CSGO? Is it good?
Yeah. I mean, it feels... So I never played Source. I dabbled in Source and I thought, I don't like this. And then I quit for about 15 years and I did what I did. I you know, started my business and I had a family. And then I started playing on and off maybe about 8 years ago. And I thought, I was playing CSGO and it felt like CS. I don't know what it is. If it's kind of the... if it's the engine, it just felt like 1.6. It looks totally different, but it just feels like I'm playing the same game. And it's obviously the same maps. Like, it's true. New Inferno, Train, Dust 2, all these maps I know like the back of my hand. Well, I used to anyway. They've changed them all now, haven't they? But yeah, no, sometimes I think if I was born 20 years later, could I have made, you know, been more successful? I'd like to think I would have been. But it is what it is. It's you can't kind of complain, you know. It's just wasn't around back then. So yeah, it's made some great friends back in the day. But obviously, you know, it is what it is. I would, you know, if I was around now, like I say, I'd like to think I'd be up there. But yeah, it is what it is. So.
At the end of this interview, do you have a final message, or is it maybe you want to shout someone out from the old days?
Can't think of anyone. Shout out to Real Fire. I play with Aaron now and again as well. So it's amazing, like, how many players from the old days are still playing with TMC or Real Fire. They're all still playing the game. So Mega Man, all those guys. So shout out to anyone who played 1.6 against me back in the day.
Money doesn't grow on trees. And believe it or not, just watching a video for free with the odd ad doesn't really pay the bills. So thanks to the following people for kindly supporting my work and this particular content. And those people are, of course, Ahmed Haju, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Animosity, Butt Pounder 420, Jensen Gore, Kovacevic, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and a special thanks always goes out to Jerky's Minion, my main man. You know what? There are plenty of perks to be found on my Patreon, like you can find out who upcoming guests are for my reflections, interviews and talk shows. You can ask me a question in my monthly AMA. Might get roasted if it's a bit spicy in how you phrase it. You can figure out which pieces of content I might want to do next. I often ask people which they think between certain ideas, offer suggestions. You can even take part in one of those long discussions with me about all kinds of esports, whatever's on your mind. So if any of those sound like something that takes your fancy, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Scrilluminati today via the Patreon link in the description below.